You're listening to the Chicago Audible Podcast, changing up the way Bears fans stay up to date on their favorite team since 2015. Now get ready, because it's time to bear down. Welcome back, Bears fans, to another episode of the Chicago Audible. I hope that you hopefully have recovered from the despair and the dread that was Sunday's game against the Titans. But with no more time to dwell, it's a chance now for all of us to move forward and look ahead to the Bears' Week 10 game against the Minnesota Vikings. I'm your host, Will DeWitt. Joined with me is my co-host, Nicholas Moriano, and we're here for our weekly Meet the Opponent episode where we're going to be bringing on Arif Hassan, who covers the Vikings for The Athletic. Nick, before we bring on Arif, is there anything that you wanted to say or do to introduce him? Or are we going to just jump right into this interview just like that?
Yeah, no, I think with Arif, I mean, he gives a lot of great insight on The Athletic. So go check out the articles that he's already written about this matchup and just some of the things that the Vikings are already doing. He goes into it specific detail in our Meet the Opponent episode, but he's a great follow on Twitter. He's mostly there for jokes and then some football, but you'll figure that out in just a little bit.
Yeah, we already did the interview. This is a recording after the fact, and you're going to learn so much about the Vikings. I'm excited for you to do so, and it's going to help you as we get closer to this game on Monday night. So without any further ado, here is our interview with The Athletic's Arif Hassan. All right, we're sitting here with Arif. Arif, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. And it was actually interesting when I was looking a little bit more about you. I guess you don't like turkey? I mean, that's the number one thing that stood out to me over here on Twitter. I don't think we need to dive into it, but I thought that was interesting that it warranted enough publicity that you don't like the big bird.
Yeah, no, I'm not a fan. I think that Thanksgiving is one of our greatest holidays. We can do better.
There we go. Yeah, you have to have high standards when it comes to what you're putting into your body. And Nick, I'll kick it over to you as we kind of now dive into some questions that we have for Arif about the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah, actually, I don't like turkey as well, so I'm with you, Arif, on that one. I'm more of a ham guy on Thanksgiving. But
hey, there we go.
Yeah, exactly. So, but to get to the Vikings and obviously what we're going to get your insight on this primetime matchup, I want to start the conversation with Dalvin Cook. These past two games against the Packers and Lions, 478 total scrimmage yards, 6 touchdowns, only the fourth player to have those stats in a two-game span. What are the Vikings doing offensively, especially recently, that has allowed Cook to have so much success?
Well, it's kind of interesting. If you break down kind of like, say, how the offensive line is blocking, which I think is one of the first things that you look at in a conversation like this, they're not blocking particularly amazingly. They're doing all right. You know, sometimes the run blocking is fantastic. Sometimes it's not all there. On one of his big runs, I think it was the 70 yarder from 2 weeks ago, or I guess 3 weeks ago because of the bye week. That one actually was an instance where there was a significantly blown block by the right guard for Cleveland. And Cook just made a move in the backfield and suddenly he was, you know, off to the races. So a lot of it is just kind of Cook is doing a lot of the stuff on his own. I don't know how sustainable that is, but, you know, it's been really impressive to watch over the past couple of games. Some of it is, you know, schematically, they've been doing something a little bit different. They've been adding kind of more complex blocking schemes into what they do. So I think for the first time ever last week, they ran something called GT counter, which is where you pull the guard and the tackle from the opposite side of the play and bring him play side and the running back follows. You know, that's something that's super popular in college football. It's getting a little bit more popular in the NFL. First time the Vikings have done that. So they're doing some stuff that's a little bit different and that's nice to see. And that's kind of helping him out. But some of it is just, you know, Cook is, you know, he like leads the league in avoided tackles. He leads the league in 10 plus yard runs. Some of it's just kind of what he's doing.
You know, it must be nice to have offensive linemen that can actually execute, you know, run plays, unlike the Bears right now. But Arif, just to kind of follow up, what has been maybe the biggest difference that you've seen from this Vikings team now on this two-game win streak than the team that started 1-6 to begin the season, whether that's offensively or defensively? What do you think is the biggest difference right now?
Yeah, well, I think maybe the most impactful difference might just be that Kirk is throwing fewer picks, right? Like, that's a significant part of, you know, their ability to produce both offensively, put the defense in a better spot from a field position perspective. And that is just something you kind of expected that to happen. He never really has a high interception rate over his career. And the picks that he threw kind of early on were just kind of baffling. Like even for him, he doesn't always make the best decisions, but he doesn't throw that many picks. And so against the Falcons, he didn't see underneath linebackers twice. That's a pretty unusual error from him. It was kind of like a Jameis Winston type error where the linebackers were just kind of invisible to him. Sometimes, you know, I mean, the picks that he throws are usually he's trying to make a throw that he knows is a dangerous throw. And he thinks he has a little bit more accuracy or a little bit more arm strength than he does. I'm thinking of like the throw last year against the Packers where he's trying to hit Adam Thielen in the corner of the end zone and Kevin King, you know, undercuts it. And he had a little bit more arm strength or accuracy. He would have gotten it. And that's a pick that I can kind of understand. He's trying to come back from a deficit. Some of the picks that he's thrown this year just kind of don't make a ton of sense. So that's gone. And I expected it to be gone. That's probably the most impactful difference between the first couple of weeks and what's happening now.
Yeah, I had a question all about those turnovers because you had a flurry of them early on this season, and so far you've been pretty clean after the bye. It just makes a lot of sense. Speaking of Cousins real quick, have they kind of changed his role in the offense as the season's worn on? Were they asking too much out of him? And now with the running game kind of, cooking up, pun kind of intended, a terrible one at that, would that be taking the ball out of his hands and turning him more into like a game manager?
A little bit. And you could see that kind of in opening drives where the Vikings opening drives had typically been pass heavy and then they were run heavy. But that kind of doesn't matter as much. I mean, they were actually pretty successful in their opening drives in a lot of these games. It was just kind of every subsequent drive that was kind of an issue. I think the reason that they can feel comfortable about doing this is mostly because they get out to a lead as a result of Cook running the ball and doing well enough at that. And then they don't ask much of Cousins. I think that when they're in a situation where, you know, they fall behind, it's going to look a lot like, you know, against Atlanta or against Indianapolis or against Green Bay, where they're going to have to rely on Cousins one way or the other. I think they always wanted to have an offense where, you know, they didn't want to have Cousins do everything for them. The last couple of games have provided situations where they haven't had to ask much of him. So I don't know how much the offense has changed in some scenarios where kind of you can see a clear difference, like in opening drives. You know, it's clear that Cousins is playing a smaller role. But I think that a lot of his limited attempt totals, which he's only had like 30 total attempts for the past two games combined, you know, that I think is just a product of the fact that they come out to early leads. And so in a game where that doesn't happen, I'm sure they're going to try and rely on Cousins. We'll see, you know, how that goes. But his role has changed, but in part because of circumstance.
Understood. Sticking with the passing game, I'm curious your take of first-round wide receiver Justin Jefferson. Here in Chicago, we've been very excited about our rookie wideout and Darnell Mooney. But looking at Jefferson, he leads all rookie wide receivers in yards with 627. He also has three touchdowns this season. We all know that the Vikings had to replace Stephon Diggs. How has Jefferson kind of filled in that void, at least so far in his early career?
Yeah, I'll say, first of all, Mooney has been really fantastic. He's been a pleasure to watch, so I'll say that. But Justin Jefferson, a lot of his yards are coming in garbage time. I don't want to undercut. He's playing really fantastically. I don't want to undercut it too much. But you take a look at a statistic where he's, you know, outpacing Randy Moss among rookie receivers, and you go all the way back to, you know, 99 or you know, 85 or whatever, and he's like second to Anquan Boldin in rookie receiving yards and all that. And that's all great, but a lot of it is, you know, he's averaging 60 yards a game outside of garbage time and 100 yards a game when you include garbage time. So that plays a role. I don't want to say that he isn't playing like a top level receiver, but he's not playing like a top five receiver, which is kind of where statistics land him. So, you know, he's a really remarkable route runner. That was pretty evident in what he was doing in college. That's how he won. Sometimes that skill translates really immediately into the NFL if you've got, you know, a particular combination of route running skills. And sometimes it takes a little bit of time because, you know, that is a skill that requires a high level of precision and communication with a quarterback. And sometimes if you're not athletic enough to translate your skills right away, you know, that's that you have to worry about that. But some of the weaknesses that he had coming out of college, they've turned out not to be weaknesses here in the NFL, especially, you know, his release coming off the line of scrimmage. He played a lot on the inside in his final year of college. They're asking him to play on the outside a lot, and he's playing a lot against press coverage. You just don't tend to see that often in college, and he's doing really well at that. So I'll say that he's playing like a pretty high-level receiver, and I'll also say that he's playing well enough that I got a question in the mailbag that I just published today. You know, who is the wide receiver one for the Vikings? And I don't know that the answer matters too much, but the fact that you get the question at all, I think, is a really good indication of where Vikings fans see him, because, you know, they hold Adam Thielen in really high regard. We're beginning to see defenses kind of treat Justin Jefferson like this might be an open question too. We saw Jaire Alexander covering Justin Jefferson on a number of routes, 3 weeks ago. So Jefferson is playing really well. I think that he's probably playing better than any other rookie receiver, and certainly the statistics reflect that. But it is kind of easy to overrate his impact on the team based on just kind of a raw look at the statistics. I think he still has a lot of room for improvement, and I think that's just as exciting as the level of play he's put forth already.
And that's why we bring you on, to get a little bit more insight on top of just what we're able to see from our vantage point. Another player I want to learn a little bit more about on offense is another young guy, tight end Irv Smith Jr. He's coming off a 2-touchdown game, his first scores of the season. I've heard some really good things about his blocking as well. It seems like things are starting to pick up for last year's second round tight end. Of course, here in Chicago, another parallel, we have a rookie tight end who was drafted in the second round. So seeing, you know, patience and things take time. I'm just curious to your take on Irv Smith.
Sure. I mean, it's always kind of a rookie tight end in Chicago, right?
Yeah.
Sorry. Irv Smith, it took a little bit of time. He actually did come on in the second half of last year. He started outpacing Kyle Rudolph in targets from like week 10 on. And that's when you kind of got the sense that the Vikings really liked what he could do for them. And so they've kind of expanded his role, and now he's, you know, out snapping and out targeting Rudolph in almost every game. His blocking has been a pleasant surprise. And you say, hey, tight end from Alabama, you kind of expect him to be able to block well, but, you know, he's primarily a receiving tight end for them. And he really only showed up, in a couple of games as a gadget player. And it wasn't really that you expected him to have that full complement of skills, but it came out of the gate. I do a weekly column where I look at, you know, every position nationally, and I try to take a look at kind of which player stood out to me. And there was even a week where I considered Irv Smith to be the best blocking tight end in the league that week. You know, he's been playing really remarkably well at that position from that perspective. They have expanded his role, and sometimes he just hasn't been able to, get open, or he hasn't been able to justify a target based just off of the coverage that the defense is showing. And so for a while, a lot of people were asking, hey, you know, where did he go? But it was just kind of like a happenstance thing. He's going to continue to be a big part of the offense. The 2 touchdowns were great. And I think that they're just kind of a reflection of the fact that even though, you know, he was coming off of a couple of weeks ago, he had a game with no targets, then he was coming off a game with like 2 targets. Even though that's the case, you know, he still remains second or third in a lot of progressions. And a lot of times he's first in the progression on the plays that they call. So they very clearly want to get him involved in the offense. They really like, you know, his mismatch capability. He's got a lot of straight line speed. And he's really great at catching the ball. And they know that when they put him on the field, they're not signaling whether or not it's going to be a pass or a run because of his capability in the run game.
Yeah, that's very much key. I want to switch over to this Vikings defense. In this little win streak that you have, they've done a pretty solid job, only allowing 21 points per game against the Packers and Lions. And even though they've allowed a good chunk of yardage, Minnesota doing a good job in a red zone as well as generating turnovers. You have 4 in the last 2 games. You're also on a 7-game streak with at least 1 takeaway on defense. Reef, you wrote a really good article that I was reading earlier today about some of the schematic changes on defense since the bye week. And I'm just curious, can you let our listeners know about those and how they're kind of leading to some of these improved results?
Yeah, well, some of the schematic changes look pretty similar to what Chicago did in 2011 when they had the leading defense in both points allowed and turnovers allowed. They did a lot of Tampa 2 and a lot of Cover 2 stuff. And so you'd think that that's kind of an outdated defense. You know, offense is not attacking, quarterbacks are familiar with it, but the NFL is pretty cyclical. And so, you know, defenses will go out of style because a lot of teams have, you know, become familiar with how to attack, and defenses come into style. And when the Vikings brought in Mike Zimmer, they implemented a cover three style defense, a lot different than Seattle's cover three. But because of the prevalence of cover three from the Seattle system, the Carolina system, and the Minnesota system, defenses got really used to attacking that. And they knew kind of how to attack cover three, even though they were all different systems in different ways. They fundamentally, you know, they had three deep zone defenders. There's only so many ways that they can be different from each other. And so the Vikings attempted to innovate, and they were ahead of what looks to be a cover four revolution in the NFL. A lot more teams are doing cover four for the past 2 years. But that requires some pretty talented corners. And the Vikings have had all three of their starting corners last year leaving free agency. They've got a bunch of rookie corners. They've had a bunch of injuries at cornerback as well. Holton Hill, who is expected to be their best corner this year, he's landed on the reserve list. Cameron Dantzler, who probably is their best corner this year, he's a rookie from the third round. He had to miss the last game, and he missed a significant portion of the Green Bay game due to injury, a pretty nasty looking hit. And so they've had to play somebody that they poached off of a practice squad in Chris Jones. And you just can't have those guys on islands in cover three and cover four. And so they've put safeties over the top. Harrison Smith, Anthony Harris are maybe the best safety tandem in the league. And they just decided, hey, we'll use those coverage skills and protect those corners and only have the corners necessarily have to cover short zone and stuff like that. So you've got corners that don't have to play deep very often. You've got corners that when they do play deep often have, help from the safeties on top. And there's a bunch of pressure packages designed to get the ball out quickly. So it's a bunch of forcing defenses to play short. And the Vikings, in the first couple of weeks, allowed a ton of deep passes. A lot of those deep passes were accurate. And then after that, defenses or offenses stopped throwing deep against them. And so it looks like, you know, that's helped out pretty tremendously. And then when you've got talents like Eric Hendricks, like Harrison Smith, Anthony Harris, you know, turnovers are going to come. The Vikings have the top or one of the top red zone defenses in the league. They've had the top red zone defense since 2015 under Mike Zimmer. It's a remarkable level of sustainability, and they rep that out a ton in practice. So it's a combination of all of these things. They know how to win in the red zone. They've done that for years, but they also have some talent deficits that they've needed to fix. And it looks like they've done a pretty decent job of doing that.
You know, always puts a smile on my face just when I have questions and you just knock them out before I even get to them, because obviously corner was a big issue with the injuries, with the turnover. And I was wondering, what are they doing different? And you already hit on that, Arif, so kudos to you. Can you let us know what offenses maybe could do to combat some of these schemes, to maybe do put a little bit more constraints on those corners, or just put them in a conflicting situation, or just try to attack them?
Yeah. And I think conflict is the name of the game here. I think that when you've got a cover two defense that you're attacking, they'll probably just take a look at some of the playbooks that were really popular in the mid 2000s, because, you know, the cover two defense died for a reason. The offense is adapted to attack it. And so they usually put those corners, specifically those corners, into conflict. Smash concept, which is a concept that runs a corner route. So a receiver runs up from the inside and then heads towards the sideline at an angle. And another receiver is underneath that guy. That puts that cornerback on the outside in conflict. Either they float up to try and cover that deep route, or they need to attack that route underneath. That's a pretty common combination. And whoever, you know, the cornerback attacks, the quarterback, throws to the other one. That's pretty normal. There's triangle concepts, which is pretty similar, but you've got this third receiver running a hitch or an option route against the linebacker in cover two. You know, there's a bunch of mismatches you can exploit there, because linebackers in coverage tend to be kind of the favored, way to attack those things. And then we've seen a lot of, four verts, three verts. I mean, if you've only got two deep defenders, you can run three deep receivers. It's, kind of basic math. And they started doing a lot of that when tight ends became a lot more athletic. And so the Tampa 2 usually has the middle linebacker help out those safeties by dropping deep in coverage as well. When you've got someone like Brian Urlacher, that's really phenomenal, but most people don't. And so they'll have a tight end, you know, attack super deep by taking advantage of the fact that tight ends are now running 4-4 and linebackers are running 4-6, right? And you know, Eric Hendricks has actually been pretty good at defending tight ends in that scenario. But a lot of times, even if you've got the best coverage linebacker in the NFL, that's going to be a problem. So, yeah, you can either attack the seam between the two safeties and the linebacker with the tight end. You can flood the zones with you know, multiple deep receivers, or you can kind of attack those corners by putting them into conflict where they're put into a situation where they have to defend multiple defenders and make a choice, and then you just go after the one they didn't choose.
Yeah, and Arif, how do you anticipate now with the Vikings attacking this Bears offense? I also read the article that Will was mentioning earlier. The Vikings, like you mentioned, are playing a little bit more those two deep high safeties that are mugging their linebackers at the line of scrimmage in those A-gaps. I mean, you could probably throw an elementary defense at the Bears offense right now and have success, but how do you think this Vikings defense will attack this Bears offense on Monday night?
Yeah, I don't know that they'll do anything particular or special. A lot of times they change their defense for what they see as a quarterback's tendency. So against Aaron Rodgers, you know, he's an elite quarterback, but he is one of the few quarterbacks that does get, you know, substantially worse against the blitz. You know, he's still an elite quarterback against the blitz, but you know, you want to help yourself as much as you can. So they blitzed him a ton, right? And then the next week they're up against Phillip Rivers, who is one of the best quarterbacks in NFL history against the blitz. And so they blitzed him like two times. And so it's very clear that they try to construct a game plan that is very specific to the quarterback that they're playing. But sometimes if they don't have a ton of information on a quarterback, or if they know that a quarterback is probably not going to be particularly special against a look, they'll just run their base defense. And so it's probably going to be a bunch of cover two, a bunch of, you know, mugging the linebackers inside the A gaps. And they've changed that a little bit over the years. They just kind of went back to it this year just because it's something that they know that they can do. Yeah, against Nick Foles, you know, Foles will take some chances, so they have to kind of be careful at that and make sure that they can punish that. But I think primarily they're just going to try and make sure that they can screw up the timing for Foles. They want to make sure that they, you know, keep track of the ball because, you know, he does throw an interceptable pass, right? And so they want to make sure that they you know, keep everything ahead of them. So they'll probably play a little bit more zone defense to take advantage of the fact that, you know, you've got your eyes on the quarterback. There's a couple of more options for you to be able to generate turnovers. They'll probably try and bracket Allen Robinson, who is I listed six receivers at midseason as players that I considered receivers of the year so far. Allen Robinson was one of them. I don't think he has the yardage for it, but he's playing just really phenomenally. And so I think that they need to probably bracket him a little bit and play tighter coverage when he's on the field or his side of the field. And so you're probably going to see a little bit more of that. But I think they would much rather play the matchups on the skill positions than they would kind of change their defense to adapt to the quarterback.
Really good stuff there. Every year, of course, well, twice we play the Vikings, so I feel like fans should know them more than others. But over there in Minnesota, there's been a lot of turnover and some roster changes. Is there maybe a name that our listeners may not really know too much about that they should be paying attention to on Monday night?
As most of the names are just, you're not going to know about them unless you've been paying a lot of attention to Vikings. Yeah, of the players that seem to have kind of just popped onto the scene, I'm going to list just a couple because I have no idea which ones are genuinely going to turn out to be good, but some of these players have flashed out a bunch, and they're all along the defensive line. So there's Hercules Mata'afa, an undrafted free agent out of Washington State. You know, he originally played defensive tackle for them, moved to linebacker with the Vikings, then back to defensive tackle. Now he's playing defensive end because they traded away Yannick Ngakoue. And he seems to actually be pretty good at defensive end. So maybe that's where he's going to stick. He actually got a lot of pressure last week, and he's been doing pretty well in that sub package over the past two games. Afadi Odenigbo, he's a sixth round pick out of Northwestern. So, you know, the Chicagoland area. He was also a guy that had a bunch of position switches. They had him play defensive tackle, and then they decided, you know, he was actually pretty good at defensive tackle, but they ran out of defensive ends, and so they moved him there. And he played at a starting level capability there, but, you know, he's behind Danielle Hunter and Everson Griffin, so it was difficult for him to kind of break out. And then their fourth-round rookie, DJ Wanham out of South Carolina, he's been getting a bunch of pressure recently. I don't know how sustainable his production has been. Some of it's been unblocked, but, you know, he's played a pretty important role in pretty high-leverage situations. He got a critical strip sack against Aaron Rodgers on what would have otherwise probably been a comeback drive. And so those guys are players that were not first or second round draft picks. They're players that haven't seen the field a ton so far. And probably one of them is going to make a pretty big impact. I don't know whose. That's why I named all three of them.
Well, there you go, right? That's a pretty catch-all solution there, and you'll hit it right. And maybe it'll be multiple, just knowing the Bears' offensive line that they'll be going up against as well. Arif, is there anything else about the Vikings' offense, defense, special teams, coaching, news this week that we haven't discussed yet that you believe our listeners would benefit of hearing about?
Yeah, a huge X factor here might be long snappers. So their long snapper, Austin Cutting, who they drafted from... I'm going to screw this up. Navy guy. I hope I didn't get that wrong. it was one of the service academies. They drafted him, cut their longtime long snapper, Kevin McDermott, because he was perfect as a long, it's the only reason you draft him, right? He was perfect, in college as a long snapper over the past 3 years. So he's been bad, in the NFL. He's had a bunch of snaps go awry. Britton Colquitt is a really remarkable holder. He's a good punter, but he's a really remarkable holder, and he saved a couple of these, but they've resulted in missed field goals. And now he's just hit the COVID list. Not the holder, the long snapper. And I don't know that the Vikings have a solution. They typically have a backup, the player at a different position that also happens to back up at long snapper. Most teams do. But usually they have a history of long snapping at least a little bit in college. So for a while it was Jared Allen, which is kind of funny to think about. And then they had a tight end from Michigan State named Josiah Price. They had another tight end on their roster recently that was a long snapper in college, but he's no longer on the roster. So I have no idea who their backup long snapper is. Their current long snapper is playing poorly, and now he's on the COVID reserve list. I don't know if it's because of a positive test or a close contact or what it is. But I think we've seen enough games, both between the Minnesota Vikings and the Chicago Bears, where a bad snap on special teams can be catastrophic. And then across the NFL, when a long snapper goes down or when there's, just a bad snap from a long snapper, I mean, that's a tough position to play. When that goes awry, it can immediately result in 7 points for another team. And so that's a situation to monitor. I have no idea what's going to happen with Austin Cutting. I don't know if it's going to be a good thing that he comes back, but I don't know what the solution is. So that's probably an X factor to pay attention to.
That's a, from Air Force. That's a good one.
I just looked it up from Air Force. Austin Cutting.
Ah, man, I'm sorry. I confused him with Joey Cardona, the Navy long snapper that the Patriots drafted. That's my excuse.
Yeah, I mean, I honest mistake. It happens, no doubt about it. I just have one more question for you, Arif. It's a two-parter. It's how I end every Meet the Opponent episode. The first part is, in your opinion, either why will the Vikings win or what will it take for a Vikings victory?
Well, the Vikings are just famously bad in Soldier Field since the divisional realignment. I just wrote a piece explaining just kind of how bad they are. And basically, if you take a look at team strength, they've underperformed their capabilities by about a touchdown when they visit Soldier Field, even after you account for normal, home away advantage and all that. They'll probably lose. I have no idea why that happens. Like I've got no explanation for why they've done so poorly at Soldier Field so consistently. But for them to, in order to win, that has to probably be a non-factor or, just a bunch of random stuff happens. You've got, Nick Foles, a lot of random stuff is probably just going to happen by virtue of that. You've got, the Vikings that play a pretty conservative style of offense that still nevertheless has a ton of deep shots. That tends to result in a fair amount of variance as well. If you're going to be a run heavy game that uses play action to attack deep, Dalvin Cook's been great. He used to be somewhat fumble prone. Maybe that's going to show up again. That hasn't really showed up again this year. And Kirk Cousins used to, lead the league in fumbles since 2016. Now he no longer does. But thanks to, a combination of Carson Wentz and Daniel Jones. That's something to kind of pay attention to. There's a bunch of randomness. And if it hurts the Chicago Bears more than it hurts the Vikings, then that's probably going to be, the difference in the game. I think there's a lot of potential turnovers available given, the pass rush strength the Bears have, the turnover capability they have, the turnover capability the Vikings have, and who's at quarterback for both teams. I think that's probably going to define things more than, solid, reliable, consistent play from either team will.
All right. Obviously, my second part is the opposite here, the counterpart. What's it going to take for the Bears to win, Vikings to lose? You may have just answered it, so you don't need to repeat everything. But if you had any others besides Soldier Field and randomness, I'm all for it.
Yeah, well, I think that, I mean, both Jalen Johnson and Kyle LaFleur are playing just really remarkable football right now. There's a really great pass rush that the Bears have. I think that for the Bears to win, I mean, they're a really good run defense, especially, you know, Roquan Smith is turning out to be a really good run defender. He had a really great game last week. But I think that you're probably going to want Akeem Hicks to be a better run defender, because that's kind of the one area where he hasn't really performed as well as he should be. And just kind of given how good the run game is for the Vikings, you want to be firing in all cylinders. So I think for the Bears to win, I think that some of the players that are truly just remarkably talented players need to be better against the run. Roquan Smith needs to continue, you know, his level of play against the run that he hadn't shown earlier in his career, and he was primarily a coverage linebacker. So if Roquan Smith plays like he did the last couple of weeks against the run, if Akeem Hicks plays like he did last year or 2 years ago against the run, that's probably going to kind of define the difference, because when the Bears rush the passer on passing, they're just going to get pressure. I mean, you've got Khalil Mack, you've got he's a Robert Quinn on the other side, right?
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's a run defender, right? But you've got Khalil Mack, you've got Akeem Hicks, you've got you know, a surprising stable of pass rushing nose tackles like Bilal Nichols. They're going to get pressure, so that's going to happen. On rundowns, I think that the Bears need to have individually their players play up to their level of talent against the run.
Nick, anything else? I think we did it.
No, yeah, that was great, Arif. And again, love the work that you do at The Athletic. So anybody who's looking to get coverage for this game and preview it, definitely check out Arif and everything that he does at The Athletic.
Yeah, Arif, is there a way for our listeners to follow you throughout the week, whether it be social media? If you already subscribed to The Athletic, just check out his work. If you haven't yet, shame on you. Subscribe to The Athletic. Really great stuff across the entire team. Every sport, really great platform for your sports news. But Arif, is there a way for our listeners to follow you? It's important this week, but there's a game in like five more weeks, so they're going to get a lot of value from that follow.
Yeah, sure. Well, I'd hope so. I mean, the only social media I have that I really like consistently post to is my Twitter. At Arif Hasan NFL, ARIFHASAN. NFL, it's mostly jokes, but sometimes I talk about football. So you can follow me there. I usually, you know, answer a lot of the replies that I get, unless they're in super bad faith. I love interacting. I'm online all day. So just follow me on Twitter. I don't really pay attention to my Instagram. I don't think I've posted anything to it. You know, don't find me on Facebook. I don't really want to be found on Facebook. So I don't really have any other social media. So
Twitter,
yeah,
it is.
You just find me on Twitter. Yeah.
And that better be your bio. I don't think it is right now, but you know, mostly jokes. And sometimes I talk football. It's a great Twitter bio. And you should trademark that thing right now. It'd be a good t-shirt for you as well.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah.
Right. You wrote it on a spot. It's great stuff. Thank you again for your time.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
All right, up next, Nick and I will be back with our weekly game preview, where we'll be discussing the latest news out of House Hall, taking a look at the matchups and stats, and of course, our weekly predictions. I want to thank Arif again for his time today to help us meet the 2020 Minnesota Vikings. Make sure to rate, review our show on Apple Podcasts to help us reach more Bears fans just like you. But until then, Bear down, Chicago. Bear down!